8:00 on a Tuesday morning as we go through Mitzvot Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
Wow. Okay, so first of all, obviously we're doing this because it's Yom Ha'atzmaut this week and it's Yom HaZikaron this week. You notice there's no number for the mitzvah because, what are you going to do? The mitzvah does not appear in the Rambam, which was and is the subject of great debate. It does appear in the Ramban, and we'll see this inside. The Ramban counts it as a mitzvah. Many people do. The Ramban doesn't. As we know, there could be many, many reasons why the Ramban doesn't count something as a mitzvah, and it's certainly not because he doesn't value it, or it could be for reasons other than whether he values it or not. The discussion of whether Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is one of the Tayag mitzvahs or not, I think, for the most part, is a waste of time, even though we're going to do it. And I'll tell you why. They once asked Rav Kook, how come you spend so much time talking about Israel? And you write about it and what have you, And Rav Kook answered, he said, what are you going to do? I read Chumash. And basically, every parsha after Lech Lecha is about or relates to or deals with the land of Israel. It's not just, one of a bunch of mitzvahs. It's fundamental to being an Orthodox Jew. It's fundamental to being a God-fearing Jew to know that God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. And that, forgetting whether it's a mitzvah or not, it's, anybody who, I'll tell this story in a different way. I once heard Rav Schechter say, he davened in some Haredi place. So he said on a Shabbos, they heard that he was the Rosh Hashiva in YU. So after davening, people that kind of ganged up on him and were arguing with him about living in Israel and Zionism and what have you. And he said, so he talked them, back and forth with some arguments, but then at some point he just said, I'm pretty sure this is the quote, this is how he talks, idiots, you open a chumash. Why are we arguing this point? Open a chumash. The land of Israel is so fundamental to the Jewish people, it's so much a part of our identity and what God wants for us and what God promised us. So that's kind of the introduction to, I think, whether it's a mitzvah or not. I think I don't want to say we're bigger than that, but you couldn't really debate how important it is to the history of the Jewish people, to who we are. Could you give up your seat? No. Normally we like to punish people who are late. I'm not. There's a clock.
Boy.
9:03.
Intensive punctuality.
9:03. I live in fear of Bruce. I'm not punctual, but Bruce is going to cut my salary if I. He's going to stop serving me breakfast. Ooh, he did already, and he's going to cut my salary. Ooh, okay. So fine. Okay. So all that by way of introduction. Please. All that by way of introduction to the fact that this is inyanei diyoma. This discussion, I think, it's an important discussion to have, but I don't think it's halacha lemaisa. Okay, and by the way, most of the conversation, I think, takes place sort of retroactively. Meaning, I don't know people, maybe I'm wrong, who say, because Aliyah is a mitzvah, I'm coming. Or the converse, because Aliyah is not a mitzvah, I'm not coming. I think you come because it's part of who you are. You know what I mean? I just think it's much bigger than that, and it's much different than that. And people who discuss it in narrow halakhic terms, maybe looking for an excuse. I don't know. Okay. Let's start with the psukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. I want to say one more thing before we start. I'm nervous that I step on people's toes, although here I'm preaching to the choir. In America, it's harder. But when I was a Shana Aleph Talmud in Gush, so 30-something years ago, occasionally we would get a chance to sit with Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, whose yard site was yesterday, his third yard site, and talk and ask questions. So inevitably this would come up. Is it a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel? And he, being not only a wise man, but also a very careful man, I remember what he said. He said, the Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, amongst the greatest people alive in the world, all live in America. Right? You want me to tell you that they're being mevatel mitzvah saseh min haTorah? That's how he said it. What he really thought, I don't know. You know, but we should be clear that there are people who we've admired in the past, who we greatly admire now, for me, who live in America, who live in England, who live in South Africa. So, you know, the halachic discussion of are you being, you know, it's different than, I'm sure, let's put it this way, I'm sure that all things being equal, it's hard for me to say, those three Gedolim and many others would have lived in Israel. But they probably thought, is my guess, that they were accomplishing more and doing more. Okay? That's probably different than if you're a, you know, you're a stockbroker. It could be different. Sorry, you want to say something?
I said he didn't. He
even
didn't
though you were late.
He didn't say Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut.
Can I say something? I could care less about Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. We talked about this at the beginning. When you live in America, the only thing that matters is whether you say Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut or not. And do you say it with a bracha or do you not say it with a bracha? Then you move to Israel. Such a pleasure. Nobody talks about it. Not because everybody does or doesn't, but because the day means so much more. And there's so much more going on. It's just not defined by, you know, whether you say Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut. It's just, it's not a fair way to say it. There was no, you know, read Kol Dodi Dofek. There's no bigger Zionist than the Rav. You know, whether he felt like he could or couldn't say Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut has nothing to do with it. I mean, he's a person who ran for and lost to be the Rabbi Rashi of, you know.
Brisk wasn't exactly a very Zionist.
Okay, but the Rav, at great personal expense, moved from the Aguda to the Mizrahi, and it cost him a lot of personal relationships. I don't think he has to defend his Zionism to anyone here. Okay, let's start. The psukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which are quoted by people who want to find the mitzvah here. Here we go. God says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ba'arvos Moav al Yarden yirecho lemor." So we're standing, you know, literally at the River Jordan, about to go into the land of Israel. "Daber al bnei Yisrael va'amarta alehem ki atem ovrim et haYarden el Eretz Kanaan." You're about to cross the Jordan into the land of Israel. "Vahorashtem et kol yoshvei haaretz mipneichem." It's a hard word, "Vahorashtem," because to be yoresh is to inherit. Normally we think of that as being passive. You know, somebody passes away, I inherit. Vahorashtem is like to actively inherit. Right? It doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, kill them, but it means to dispossess them and to actively take possession of the land. Vahorashtem et kol yoshvei haaretz mipneichem, ve'ibadetem et kol maskiotam, ve'et kol tzalmei maseichotam ta'abedun, destroy all their avodah zorah, ve'et kol bamotam tashmidun, and the places where they worship avodah zorah, you should destroy. Okay, here's where the question starts, the narrow halachic question. Vahorashtem et kol yoshvei haaretz. That whole pasuk could be read in one of two ways. Who wants to suggest? No, it could be read in one of two ways. Vahorashtem et haaretz, you will, or
you should,
or you shall. It could be read as kind of a prophecy, or even a promise on God's part. God is saying to the Jewish people, don't worry, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go in, and you're going to inherit the land, and you're going to destroy all of their places of avodah zarah. Or it could be God is saying, you have to. The puzzle, if we're honest with ourselves, the puzzle could be read in two different ways. Let's continue. Nun ben, nun gimel. Again, the same word. Vahorashtem et haaretz v'yishavtem ba ki lachem natati et haaretz l'reshet otah. I've given it to you, you should live there. V'nachaltem et haaretz b'goral, you should distribute it in a lottery. L'mishpichotechem, etc., etc. Now, nun hey. Here's the scary part. V'im lo torishu et yoshrei haaretz mipnechem. This is clearly a prophecy that's come true. If you don't disinherit the people who live there, v'haya asher totiru mehem, those who you leave behind will be l'sikim be'einechem v'litzninim b'tzidechem. Some language expert could look this up, but v'litzninim b'tzidechem means a thorn in your side. I bet this is the first use of the phrase ever. There'll be a thorn in your side. They'll be
Mayor
a constant...
Huh? Mayor Kahana used it.
Meir Kahan, I think, was after Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah.
I understand that they may have been on the same level, but yeah, he was after. Okay.
Are all these things you're reading now?
Wait, let me just finish the psukim. V'tzaru etchem al ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim bo, and they'll cause problems for you. And then God says, v'haya kasher dimiti lasot lahem eser lachem. And that which I wanted to do for you, I'll do for them. If you don't love the land enough to take possession of it, fine, they can have the land. Yes.
Are all these things one time mitzvot for the generation of Joshua?
Okay, so good. So one thing is to say, yes, it's a commandment, but it's a commandment for those people. What does it have to do with us? That's what you're saying.
Is it also...
One second, am I...
Or is it forever?
Right, so obviously if there's a machlokes and there's a major discussion, we should be honest. Mm-hmm. One possibility is it's just a prophecy. God is saying, this is what will happen. The other is, no, God is commanding. But even if God is commanding, Bruce has a fair point. Happens. Mm-hmm. That maybe the fact that God commanded Moshe and Yoshua to take possession of the land has nothing to do with us. It was what's called a mitzvah l'shata. It was a mitzvah then. It's not a mitzvah now. It's a fair point.
Unless we all
so
serve the Sinai.
Two different mitzvot or one?
Right, so there's a lot of stuff. We, you know, I don't want to get into that. There's a lot. There's a mitzvah to destroy the seven nations. There's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. Technically speaking, there's a lot going on. It could be two different mitzvahs, but we're trying to just find a source for the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So now, one of the problems with the Sefer Mitzvah of the Rambam, that's not really a problem, is that he didn't bother to tell us why he doesn't count mitzvahs. You know, you look there, if you find the mitzvah, well, that's great. If you don't find the mitzvah, sure, I would love a cookie. If you don't find the mitzvah, then I the sugar or whatever. if they're frozen.
Take them out of the freezer.
That's probably why they were frozen.
That's a good deduction. You went to law school.
Okay. So, you look all over the Sefer Mitzvot of Rambam. The Rambam was a big Zionist. There's a lot of stuff in there about loving the land of Israel, but it's not there. Okay? Again, background is, everybody knows, the Rambam spent almost the entirety of his life in Chutz La'aretz.
But you can try to go to Israel.
Okay, he was in Israel at some point.
Right.
Okay? But I'm just saying it's hard to... Historically, you have both the Rambam and the Ramban, who spent most of their lives in Chutz La'aretz. There's an amazing thing, but so the Rambam had tried to, like my grandfather lived here in 1946. You know, they couldn't survive here, so they left. The Ramban, who lived almost his entire life in Girona, lived the last 2.5 years of his life in Israel. Okay, the Ramban also a huge, huge Zionist. Really, you could feel it. The Ramban, I would claim, well, not, this is not for now, was the first and only Jew in the history of the world to be exiled to Israel. Okay? After he won the debate with Pablo Cristiani, yeah, they kicked him out. It was dangerous, but he had no choice. So he became the first Jew ever who was exiled to Israel.
I saw him in Tveria.
You saw the Ramban in Tveria?
Yeah.
How's he looking?
He's hanging up.
But it works that way. Really, we know from our own lives that yeah, you could go any place, but once you're leaving where you know where your home is, if you have any sense, you go to Israel. Now we got to make some progress.
Yes, I'm not sure it's fair to always characterize people with a good intention. You know, there's a guy who would love to give Shabbos. Obviously, love it. But he doesn't. And you see, you know what?
Yeah, but we're talking about the Rambam and the Ramban.
How they love Israel.
Yeah.
And even if they're here or not here, they're big Zionists until some got here, some didn't get here, like the Rav.
Okay.
He would never say about someone living in Utah. He would love to keep Shabbos, but what can he do? He's in Salt Lake City.
Correct.
He doesn't keep it, but he'd love to.
Correct.
So he's the greatest lover of
Shabbos. So maybe that's a good way to say, is it a mitzvah? Are you mavatal a mitzvah or not?
Because if you're here, you're a Zionist.
Because it's
if
different.
Not, you're just not.
Okay,
just
if that simple. Makes you feel better, good for you.
Well, you would take a guy not keeping that, Shabbos. If that, he's a Shabbos observer.
Which is why I'm trying to distinguish between the two, but you won't let me. Let me? Okay, here comes the Ramban. Here comes Ramban. By the way, if it was usher to live in Chutz La'aretz, that would be different. If there was a chiyuv kares, you know, if you told me just the parallel between, well, he tries his best, but he eats chametz on Pesach, and he tries his best and he lives in Chutz Laaretz is just faulty from beginning to end. There's absolutely no parallel between the two. Okay, so the Rambam doesn't have anything in the Sefer HaMitzvos. The Ramban did not write his own Sefer HaMitzvos. What he did was write Hasagot, you know, notes on the Rambam. So there are different sections of the Ramban's Sefer HaMitzvos. When the Rambam counts something and the Ramban doesn't like it, so he'll have a Hasaga on it. But the Ramban doesn't ever say, because I reject this mitzvah, I'm going to put this mitzvah in. What he does is reject a bunch of mitzvahs, and then he has a section at the end. It's fantastic. It's called, so he's so respectful, it's called Mitzvot Sheshachachan Harav. Mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot to count. Like a funny way of saying it. Obviously, there's a major machlokas. So in that list, in mitzvah, I think it's Dalet, yeah, mitzvah in source number 2, the Ramban counts the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, obviously the Ramban doesn't say anything about the Rambam, but he knew that when he was writing that the Rambam hadn't counted it. So, you know, he's kind of beating you over the head with why this should be a mitzvah, because he knows that it's not counted by the Rambam, and he wants to make the point. So watch what he does. Let's read a little bit. It's actually longer than this. I didn't quote all of it. Mitzvah revi'it shenitztavinu lareshet ha'aretz Ashenotan hakel yitbarach v'yitalela avotenu la'avraham liyitzchaku liyaakov. We are commanded to inherit the land. This I can't tell this for sure, but I think the way the Ramban writes this is already hinting at where he's going. The land of Israel? No. The land that God promised to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Ramban is basically already hinting at the land that if you open a Chumash, starting from Parshas Lech Lecha, is central to who we are as Jews. And on top of that, he includes this in the negative part. You just asked, it is a separate mitzvah. So the Ramban says, no. V'lo na'azva biyad zulatenu min ha'umot o lishmama. We can leave it neither desolate or with other people living there. V'amaroi lahem, he's going to quote a bunch of psukim. V'horashtem, this is what we read. V'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet otah v'itnachaltem et ha'aretz. The Ramban obviously reads the psukim that we started with as an imperative, as a commandment, as a shall, and not as simply a promise. And he says, you could look in tons of places. V'nichpal kazeh ha'inyan b'mitzvah zo b'mekomot acherim ka'amaro yitbarak bo'u rishu et ha'aretz ha'shen yishbati la'avoteichem. Right at the beginning of Devarim, Moshe says, God says, come live in the land that I promised you. U'parat otalahem b'mitzvah zo kula b'gvulea u'mitzarea. And there it even lists the boundaries. Kimo she'amar ubo harho emori ve'al kol shcheinav ba'arava bahar bashvela ba'negev uv'chof ayam. The Ramban says, look how many psukim are spent on the land of Israel and the need to live there. Shelo yanichu mimena makom. We should not leave any of it uninhabited. And he keeps going. Ve'hare'aya shezo mitzvah. How do I know it's a mitzvah and not just a nice thing? Amru yitale b'inyan hamraglim. God said to them, Alei reish kasher, I'm sorry, Kalev said, Alei reish kasher diber Hashem elokech alach, go up and inherit the land as God told you. Al tirava al techat. V'amar od. I'll give you more psukim. Uvishloach Hashem etchem mikadesh barnea lemor alu urishu et ha'aretz asher natati lachem. V'kasher lo avu la'alot. You keep seeing references that God told you to inherit the land. That you rejected the word of God. What was the word of God? Go live in the land. And the Meraglim said, don't. That's the key line. Says the Ramban, you see here, Shehaita mitzvah. It was a positive command. Lo yiud vahavtacha, not your destiny, not your goal, not just the value. Okay, and he says v'zoi shachachamim korinota milchemet mitzvah. Now, it's an interesting thing. The Ramban is trying to prove to us that this is an actual mitzvah saseh min haTorah, and I don't mean it. I don't know how else to say it. He doesn't have any gemaros so far. He doesn't have any mamori chazal. He's got psukim. But I think the Ramban, there are gemaras you could have quoted, and we'll get to them. But I think the Ramban was trying to make the point that we started with. it's so obvious. Right? Why would I need anything other than a chumash? How could anybody read a chumash and think otherwise? Yes.
No, why do you need a Gemara? You have something straight from the Torah.
Good.
And you might as well do something derisive than the Rambam.
Of course, but yes and no, because normally, you know, there's something later on that points to the fact that that was a mitzvah. Somehow, because you could read a pasuk differently, or maybe because of Bruce's point. For each of these, you could say, yeah, but that was only for Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, but that was only for the Dor HaMidbar. How do you know? You know, when you're working with the fact that it's not in the Rambam, you think to yourself, the Rambam also read Chumash. Right? Where was he with all these psukim? Mm-hmm. So one possibility that I think ought to be rejected, but we'll get to it, is Bruce's idea. Yeah, it's all over Chumash, but it's a mitzvah l'shata. Not maybe a mitzvah l'doros. There are things like that. You know, in the Chumash it says that you should take the blood of the Korban Pesach and sprinkle it on your doorpost and on the lintel. But Chazal come and say, that's only Pesach Mitzrayim. That's not forever, right? In the Torah, there are all these mitzvahs that have to do with the man. Hey, nobody counts them as mitzvahs. It's clear they're mitzvahs l'doros. They're not mitzvahs. So it's out there. I'm just raising it. Now, you know, I didn't quote the whole thing. After the dots, we're a little more than halfway down. Now the Ramban's going to get to some Gemaras, but kind of in a backwards way. He says, "Va'omer ani ki hamitzvah she'achachamim mafligim ba." The mitzvah that literally the Chazal exaggerate about. V'hi dirat eretz Yisrael. That's living in Israel. Ad she'amru shekol hayotzei mimena v'dar b'chutz la'aretz yehei be'einecha ke'oved avodah zara. Right? That's a Maimar Chazal. Now, in fairness, that Maimar Chazal doesn't say it's a mitzvah. It just says a person lives in chutz la'aretz, it's as if he's worshipping avodah zara. I'll just skip the proofs to that. And he says, you see, mimitzvat asei hazeh, she'amru b'hakol hu mimitzvat asei hazeh, she'nitztavinu l'reshet ha'aretz v'lashevet ba. Im kein, he says, hi mitzvat asei l'dorot. The Ramban knows what he's up against. He says, when Chazal, what he did was, he has these psukim, he has the Torah, and then he says, and look how Chazal talked about it. It's clear that they understood it to be a mitzvah l'dorot, not just, you know, at that time. Okay, and now he makes another point. Mitchayev kol yachid mimenu. See, because you could have said, the Raman's making another point, which is, not only is it a mitzvah l'dorot, but it's a mitzvah on each individual. See, you could have said, listen, I live in Brooklyn. When all the Jews go, when it's safe to live there, when we've done, you know, then I'll go. But what am I going to do? Right? I'm not going to go there and conquer the land. I'm an accountant. You know, I could confuse them with my number knowledge. But I, you know, what am I going to do? So the Ramban says wrong. The Ramban says it is a mitzvah l'doros, and it's a mitzvah on individuals. Okay. And now he says va'afilu bizman galut. The Ramban says many Gemaras that point to the fact that it continues on. Okay, let's stop here. There's more to read, but let's stop here. The Ramban says definitively, mitzvah saseh min haTorah on individuals across the generations. Again, my feeling is the Ramban is saying this based on it's simply too important. Now, what about the fact, the theoretical argument that, you know, that Bruce had raised, couldn't you argue that it's only for that time? So what the Ramban says is, well, I see so many Gemaros, none of which say specifically it's a mitzvah saseh, otherwise he would have quoted it, but that speak about the great value. It doesn't make any sense that God valued the land of Israel, but only, you know, during the first generations of the Jewish people. I think the Ramban just saying, intuitively, it just doesn't make any sense.
We all now, stood at Sinai, didn't we?
Yes.
So the obligation is upon us all.
Yes and no. Again, there's another side to this, which is, but you know, most of us are on the one side. The problem is, again, the Rambam doesn't count it. Okay, so
does he include another mitzvah?
So there's a lot. We'll come to a lot of that. There are a lot of possibilities. It's almost inconceivable. Talk about guilt, and no one comment on this, but because I'm not 100% sure, but it's out there. The Rambam, not only did the Rambam not live in Israel, he lived in Egypt. Okay? The Rambam used to sign his letters, you know, Moshe ben Maimon, Ha'over al Gimel Asay B'chol Yom. Okay? The man lived with certain guilt feelings. For, you know, we could discuss how he justified it, but he lived with certain guilt feelings. Okay. Now, so why doesn't the Rambam count it? So the radical position, but it's really the first one, there's a sefer called Megillat Esther, which is not on Megillat Esther. I forget, somebody de Leon, his first name was not Ponce, I don't think, wrote it. And it's a defense of the Rambam against the Ramban. Every single time it's an attack on the Rambam, the Megillat Esther explains why the Rambam is right. The value of the sefer is limited by the fact that the Rambam is always right. It would be better if he sometimes said, yeah, I agree with the Ramban. But anyway, he basically says, no, it's a mitzvah l'shata. The Rambam didn't count it because the Rambam makes clear, I only count mitzvahs that last forever. And this mitzvah does not last forever.
Well, what was the
now, one second. Now, there's two possibilities, and this is something we should be honest about, because, you know, the kind of the Naturi character view, which we all reject, but still, they'll say as follows, and we'll come to the Gemara. God kicked us out. Right? It's like, you know, in the bad example, well, if God showed up and said, stop keeping Shabbos, maybe we'd have to rethink it, God forbid. So if God kicks us out of the land, so the Megillat Esther says, the mitzvah applied, but then God kicked us out. And so the mitzvah stopped applying. And that's why the Rambam doesn't count it. That's a pretty radical view, and I think it's rejected by most. But let's just start with that position. It's the counter position to the Ramban. The Ramban is inconceivable that it's, you know, history shows us, the Chumash shows us, of course it's a mitzvah. Megillat Esther says, yeah, well, God kicked us out. Maybe it was a mitzvah once. You know, I won't argue with you about the psukim. It was a mitzvah once. It's not a mitzvah anymore. And that's classic Rambam. The Rambam doesn't count mitzvahs about man. The Rambam doesn't count sprinkling your, right? The Rambam only counts mitzvahs that are ledoros. Okay? Now, there is a fascinating Gemara that makes it sound like, the Ramban doesn't quote it, I don't think, but it's out there in the literature, and that's how I came across it. Actually, the end of Ksubos, Stav Kuf Yud and Ksubos, that's where all the kind of the fun or less fun, there's an Agadah that we'll get there about the Gimel Shvuos that had lay dormant, you know, at the end of Ksubos where nobody ever found it, till the Satmar Rebbe like made a whole religion out of it. Okay, that like this daf became famous. But before that, there's just a simple brisa that's quoted in the Gemara in source number 3. Tana Rabbanan. Hu omer la'alot, vihi omeret shelo la'alot. You have a married couple. He says, I'm not saying, you know, it never happened. I'm not saying it happened to us. He says, time to make aliyah. She says, not going. You know, I love my mother. I love the weather here. I'm not going. Says the Gemara, kofin ota la'alot. We force her to make aliyah. Ve'im lav, I can only force her up to a point. If she refuses to go, teitze belok tuva. We allow him to divorce her and not pay the ksuba. Well, leave that for a second. Now, just in case you think it's sexist, it's great. It's not. He omerit la'alot. She says, hey, I went to Kem Moshaba, you know, time to go. Hu omer shelo la'alot. He says, I went to Kem Tar Vidas, never heard of it. Okay? Kofin oto la'alot. We force him to go. V'im lav, same exact thing. And if he refused to go, yotzi v'yitain ktuba. We force him to free her, but he has to pay. So now, what's pshat?
It must be a mitzvah to have these rules apply. It wouldn't apply if it's not a mitzvah.
Look, you could try to argue that it's just a value, but yeah, I think the simplest reading is, wait, you're allowed to divorce your wife, and you don't have to pay the ksuba, which is a requirement of halacha. It must be, the simplest reading is, it must be that she rejected a halacha, that there's a mitzvah to go on aliyah. I think that's the fair reading. Comes along Tosfos, really as strange a Tosfos as you'll ever see. And Tosfos says on this, number four, Hu Omer La'alot. So first Tosfos just says, you should know something. Eino noheg bizman hazeh. This mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. Now, if it just said that, we'd be lost. It would be hard to know. You know, also, because why would the Gemara bring the case? But Tosfos explains, kind of. De'ika sakanat drachim. So Tosfos, you don't know who exactly, but it's in the 1200s. 1200s, let's be clear. It wasn't just that your boat might sink. It was a crusade. You know, like...
But a number of Balotosos did end up coming.
Good.
Okay.
I'm just...
Okay, wait.
I'm saying, let's point out the obvious, which is it wasn't just a difficult journey. But it's really hard to understand this. Because you could simply say as follows. You could say, it is a mitzvah, but pikuach nefesh, like all other mitzvahs at Torah, right? Pikuach nefesh is docha kol haTorah kula, except for the big three. And as much as we want to be Zionists, this isn't one of the big three. We'll come back. We have to come back to this idea in a second. But Tosfos doesn't say, like, it's hard to read that into Tosfos. Tosfos seems to say, Eino noheg bizman hazeh de'ika sakanat drachim.
And so what is he dangerous?
I don't know. Your reading is as good as mine. Right?
How threaded is history through all of these arguments? And how colored were they by what was going on in Eretz Yisrael at the time?
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a practical consideration.
Correct. But it's a strange way to say it. And now it gets worse. Omer Rabbeinu Chaim, he is about one of the Balei Atosus. De Achshav Eino Mitzvah Ladur Be'eretz Yisrael. That's a clear statement. There's no mitzvah, but listen to the reason. Ki yesh kama mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. Okay, because you have Truma Sumaisus and Shemitah and Yovel and Neter Avaya, right? Vekama Onshin, and you get punished for these things. De Ein Anu Yecholim Li Zaher Bahem Vela Amod Alehem.
Why not?
Right? He says also, it's like, it's a very narrow view. If you go to Israel, like, you have to deal with all these mitzvahs, and you could mess up. Right, mm-hmm. You know, you plant a tree, and now there's all these halachas about planting a tree, and we don't really know how to deal with them.
Or maybe you can't do the mitzvahs for some reason.
Okay, but it'd be hard to know why you couldn't be mafshir mitzvahs unless you say we don't know what the status is. But this is the Tosfos that's widely quoted to support the view that it's not a mitzvah. You know, both parts are really, really hard to understand. Again, one is, yeah, nobody says that you have to put your life at risk to live in Israel. But that doesn't mean it's not a mitzvah, it's just a mitzvah like, you know, nobody says you have to put your life at risk to eat matzah on Pesach, and to take a lulav, and to hear shofar. They're not doche pikuach nefesh. Shabbos isn't doche pikuach nefesh, right? Somebody's sick, get in a car, go to the hospital. So it's just, it's a hard formulation. The other one is even more disturbing, because, you know, we think how exciting it is that we could try to do these mitzvahs. I have a friend who, there's two brothers. One is like a regular guy, and one is like, one is kind of charedi. So, just as an example, you'll see the way he thinks. It's just interesting, because I think this really is a distinction between communities, between worldviews. Bizman hazeh, the mitzvah of taking a lulav in esrog, dal and minim, is Doraisa on the first day and Drabban on the other days, right? It was a takan of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who came along. But almost certainly, according to the Rambam, the way it was originally is B'makom HaMikdash, it's the mitzvah Doraisa for 7 days. Okay? Now, according to the Rambam, Yushalayim, and certainly the area of the Kotel, you know, probably has the Kedusha of the Makom HaMikdash, and people think that it's likely then that for the Rambam it would have the same din, which would mean that to take a lulav and esrog on Chol HaMoed at the Kotel might be a mitzvah d'oraisa, not a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Okay, so what do I think? What do I tell my kids? Let's go to the Kotel with a lulav and esrog on Chol HaMoed, so that we could get a mitzvah d'oraisa, because in Efrat it's only mitzvah d'rabbanan. What did this guy tell his son? Be careful not to go to the Kotel on Sukkos, because if something's wrong with your lulav and esrog, you'll be mevatel the mitzvah d'oraisa.
Does he live here?
Now, no.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm not mocking it, but I think that when I think of living in the land of Israel, I think of opportunities to do more mitzvahs. Now, it's true, it comes with some risk, right? You have to be mafresh, you have to do it properly and whatever. But I happen to think that on some level, for religious Zionists, this is great. Let's take that risk and for other people, we're passive. We want to stay outside of the historical process, both halachically and otherwise. And listen, if you don't go to the Kotel on Sukkos, at least you aren't mevatel l'mitzvah saseh midoraisa, right? It's a different worldview. Now,
my question: I think that the Tosfos, though, if you look at it in the very limited context of the Gemara, makes a lot of sense. That we don't know it to beat someone to join their spouse to make aliyah. We don't do the beating. Why? Because there's some real sakanos involved. So that it's sort of like why isn't Puruvu commanded to a woman? Because there's sakanos nefashos involved. Hashem wouldn't command a person to do something that. Same thing.
Okay. It wasn't how I read Tosfos, but it's a very interesting read. You're saying, I'll say this, the Tosfos is always quoted, right. Not about forcing your wife, but about the mitzvah of living in Israel. Okay, so we've seen so far, Rambam, we don't know, Ramban, we know, Tosfos says no mitzvah, for strange reasons. Just as an aside, but I think it's an important one to be made. We do, you see, if living in Israel was not doche pikuach nefesh, here's a big problem. Then how can we justify anybody dying for the state of Israel? Right? Tomorrow we're going to spend the day, giving meaning to the memory of people who sacrificed their lives al kiddush Hashem. But what about the fact that it's not one of the big three? So here it's so intuitive that it's obvious. But there's a minchas chinuch that says it, plenty of other people say it, which is, obviously, the mitzvah of milchama, milchemes mitzvah, milchemes rishus, is doche pikuach nefesh. Meaning it's understood people die in a war. So to ask the question, how do you know that you're allowed to sacrifice your life or somebody's life to live in the land of Israel? I think people would say, how do you? The answer is it's so intuitive. When God tells you to go to war, He's not telling you that everybody's going to come back. Right, part of the idea of going to war, which is also a mitzvah satorah, is that people lose their lives. And so you could say that aliyah is not doche pikuach nefesh for an individual, but the mitzvah of milchama, either milchemes mitzvah, which I think clearly the ones we're fighting, or even a milchemes arishus, that is doche pikuach nefesh. That's clear in halacha. Okay, now let's try to make some sense of this. So in the historical development of the mitzvah, the Avnei Nezer, who lived only in the 1800s, he was the Sachat Shaver, he was either the father or the son of the Shem Yishmuel. He was two different people. He was a Hasidic Rebbe and a huge Talmud Chacham who wrote tshuvos that are quoted widely. Usually you're one or the other. Okay? He has a very famous tshuva about living in Israel. With respect to, remember I quoted before, the Rambam doesn't count it, and I said the Megillas Esther comes along and says he doesn't count it because he doesn't think it's a mitzvah because it's not noeg l'doros. Says the Avnei Nezer, v'ha Megillas Esther kasav she'ta'am ha-Rambam shalom minna'ah. The reason the Rambam didn't count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael mishum she'eino noheget bizman ha-galut. He says v'guf, right, because it doesn't count, it doesn't apply in the exile. V'guf divarav she'amar shema shalom manah Rambam yeshivat Eretz Yisrael mishum she'eina noheget bizman hazeh lo have mitzvah noheges ledoros. He says two damning words, eino klum, wrong. And he says as follows, de'im kain lama mana trumotu masrot v'chala. So the Rambam counts tons of things that don't apply bizman hazeh. That's not the Rambam's standard. V'afilu bimei Ezra lo nohagu min hatorah l'da'as ha-Rambam. V'hadavar pashut, he says, Shem mitzvah shenoheget limot ha-mashiach chashiv noheget ledorot. He says that's the rule for the Rambam. Any mitzvah that's going to come back into effect, karbanos, beis hamikdash, all these other mitzvahs, the Rambam counts them. They don't apply bisman hazeh. So he says, the Megillah says it's got to be completely wrong, because we see from plenty of other mitzvahs that the Rambam counts, even if it's true that it's not noheg bisman. This is just he's just making the halachic point. Even if it's no, if it's true that Aliyah is not noheg bisman hazeh as a mitzvah d'oraisa, the Rambam would still have to count it because it's going to be noheg limos hamashiach. Right? That's a problem that people have to have, and that's a problem with the point that Bruce made before. If your whole argument is it was only a mitzvah in the time of the Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim, wait, so you don't think it's we're ever going to live in Israel? Like, what's your vision of the Messianic era? It's going to be, you know, people in London and South Africa, and, you know, it can't be.
Well, it could be, because when they're back from Babel, if people stayed in Babel, they're going to go back.
Right.
You built a place in the district.
Right. But nobody thinks that was good.
Yeah,
no, so I'm saying it's hard to bring a proof from that. You're absolutely right. Historically speaking, when Ezra and Nehemiah came back in the Aliyah Shniyah, they came back with 43,000 Jews. And the 43,000 Jews who they came back with were the dregs of society, shall we say. But that's a terrible thing. That you could ask yourself, how could it be? Look, now's not the time. But I often think, you know, when you ask yourself, how could it be that people didn't come back? And the answer almost certainly was exactly what we have now. It was easier to live in Bavel. There were more kosher restaurants in Bavel. There were better schools in Bavel, right? It was more comfortable in Bavel. The economy was better in Bavel. I'm not saying it as a joke. Like, I can't think of a more obvious historical parallel than what we have now. Now, in many ways, and all of us know this, in many ways, I don't know, it could be easier to be an Orthodox Jew in Teaneck today than it is in Israel. And I'm sorry that your house was knocked down, you know, and you can't go back. But, you know, it's not crazy. It might be wrong, but it's not crazy. Okay, so the first thing Miguel Sester says is that he's famous for, I'm sorry, the first thing that Avni Nezer says, Miguel Sester's got to be wrong. The reason why the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah can't be because it doesn't apply bisman hazeh, because even if it doesn't apply bisman hazeh, he'd have to count it, because it will apply limos hamashiach. Okay? Now, there's a second part of this tshuva of the Avnei Nezer that's famous. It's a little off point, but not really. In which, when people ask, and try to answer the question that was asked here, well, if it's a mitzvah, how come not everybody does it? How come there are Gedolei Yisrael who don't do it? So listen to this. The Avnei Nezer is a fascinating idea. In the next paragraph.
That's true. The people did every mitzvah all the time. I mean, was this unusual that some people did not do the mitzvahs? You just mentioned that.
What do you mean?
If it's a mitzvah, everybody should do it. Well, did always everybody do it 100%?
No, but we'd like to think the greatest people.
The greatest people, right. But not the whole population.
Well, listen, in a perfect world, you would do all the mitzvahs. But, you know, there's a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. I'm embarrassed that sometimes I lose my temper with my mother. You know, I.
Turn off.
I am the world's greatest son. Wait, one second. Second paragraph. Now, look, second paragraph in the Avnei Nezer. He says as follows: Me'ata im yidor adam be'eretz Yisrael. Now he wants to say, okay, but what does it mean to do the mitzvah? So the Avnei Nezer has a very fascinating idea. Now he says, if a person will live in the land of Israel, ve'ein lo sham shum matzav parnasa, but he has no way to support himself. He's supported from Chutz La'aretz. By the way, that was how it worked back then. When the Talmidim of the Gra came, when the earliest Chasidim, the Lubavitchers, the Baal HaTanya became the head of Chabad Chasidus, because the other people went to Israel. And it was his job to raise money for them. That was understood. We're going to Israel. There's no way to support ourselves there. You'll support us. Right? It's kind of like, you know, now we have these Yisachar Zevulun contracts. People know, you know, I'll pay you to learn, and that, right? So you had people paid them to go to the land of Israel. So it says the Avnei Nezer, V'adayin hashpa'at mizonotav ayde hasar shemichutz la'aretz. That's kind of Kabbalistic. They're being supported by the Tsar, you know, the
prince,
the general, the prince, the angel of Chutz La'aretz. He says, "Mazo Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael." That's not Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael, right? He's not making fun of them. What he's really doing is justifying people who don't go. He says, "If you're going to go and you won't be able to support yourself, you know, it's a more expansive view." I think what Dominic is really hinting at is Mitzvah Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael isn't just I live there, but it's I'm helping you know, society, I'm helping the economy, I'm helping it grow. And he says, you know, if you're just sitting there in a, you know, let's say you're just sitting there in a kolel, okay, you're not teaching, not helping anybody, and just being supported from Chutz La'aretz, he says that's not Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael, and that might not be the mitzvah. V'zen nearly tam ha'gidolim, there it is, shelo nasu la'eretz Yisrael. He says, that seems to me to be the rationalization for great Jews who didn't go to Israel, because they realized that they couldn't make a go of it there. They would just be supported from Chutz La'aretz. And then he has, we won't read it inside, he says, he has a great proof. He says, Chazal say that Yaakov Avinu gave all of his profits from his years with Lavan to Esav, because he said Ein nechse chutz la'aretz ru'uyin. You know, he didn't want to. So, because what do you mean they're not? Why doesn't he take that money and go to the makolet, you know, and buy fruits and vegetables from the land of Israel? Then they will be. So the Avnei Nezer says no, because if the source of the money is chutz la'aretz, you can't make it Eretz Yisrael money. Right, so he says, so if you send me money from Chutz La'aretz and now I go to the makolet, the fruits and vegetables that I buy, they're still somehow Chutz La'aretz fruits and vegetables, not halachically, obviously. Okay,
in so, many cases they are,
huh?
Many cases they are.
Right. Okay. So he's saying
they couldn't take a carpentry course or learn how to open a makolet. What were they doing in Europe?
Well, Gedol Yisrael were leading the communities in Europe. Don't be so judgmental. Okay. You could think it, you can't say it. Okay. Now, let's go back to the Rambam. So we're still stuck with the Rambam in that the fact is he doesn't count it. We think the Megillas Esther is wrong, that the reason he didn't count it was because it's not Noheg Ludoros, because of course it's Noheg Ludoros. It might not, even if it's not Noheg now, of course it's Noheg Ludoros. So there are two other good suggestions, I think, for why the Rambam didn't count it. Look at number 5. We've talked about this before. The Rambam has these rules, 14 Shorashim, 14 principles for why he counts things and why he doesn't count things. So number 4 in those principles are Shorashir V'i She'ein wa'uy limnot hatzivuyim ha'kololim ha'torah kula. I do individual mitzvos, but they're broad principles that encompass many, many mitzvos. So, you know, for example, when the Torah says Ushmartem va'asitem otam, that's a commandment. But that's a commandment to keep the Torah. So the Rambam says, I can't count that as a mitzvah, because it's a broad principle. It's written as an imperative, but it doesn't fit into the categories of mitzvahs. Example, like the Bahag doesn't count the mitzvah of belief in God. He says, it's not a mitzvah, it's the foundation of everything we do. To make it a mitzvah would be to minimize it. So one of the suggestions that's made over time, and this is the one that I really think is true, is that the Rambam can't count the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's too important to be a mitzvah. It's too big to be a mitzvah. 50 other mitzvahs, 100 other mitzvahs are contingent on this one mitzvah. So it's almost like he took the Ramban and he said, yeah, of course, of course, of course. Now I can't count. The Ramban says the whole Torah is about living in the land of Israel. Says the Rambam, you're right. And therefore I can't count in the Targ mitzvahs, because it's not a mitzvah. It is more like a foundational principle. Okay, it's true. You have to be like, you have to have a certain worldview to say that, and there's no proof to it in the text. That's one suggestion.
Does he count keeping Shabbos as a mitzvah?
Yeah, of course.
But then there are lots of things that are dependent on that. You've got 39.
No. There are 39. There are 39 ways to be mechal Shabbos, but that's the definition of the mitzvah. It's slightly different. There's a positive commandment to sanctify the Shabbos, and a negative commandment not to do malacha on Shabbos. What is malacha? Oh, those are 39 categories. But it's all within that one mitzvah. Okay. Other suggestion that some people make. The 10th shorash in the Rambam. He says, Ashosha asiri, she'ein wa'u limnot ha'hakdamot Ashahim l'tachlit achat min ha-tachliot. We don't count things that are preparatory to the mitzvah. You have to build a sukkah, otherwise you won't have a sukkah. But that's not a mitzvah satorah. You have to bake matzos. You have to buy it, right? But those aren't mitzvahs. You have to make tzitzis, otherwise you won't have tzitzis. But that's not the mitzvah. So some people want to say, it's true, if you live in Israel, you could do 50 other mitzvahs. And so in order to do that, you have to live in the land of Israel. But that doesn't make it, you know, narrowly defined a mitzvah. It just makes it the thing you have to do in order to be able to do other mitzvahs. I think both of those are pretty good answers for the Rambam. Now, let's try with the few minutes we have left. There's tons of stuff left to discuss. Let's talk a little bit about this famous Gemara that the Satmar Rebbe, you know, made into a religion. But it's a real Gemara, and it is really based on this idea that God kicked us out. Doesn't that matter? The Gemara says...
We kicked ourselves out.
Huh?
We kicked ourselves out. Who brought the Romans in here? God?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. Okay, source number 6. The Gemara says, it talks about Hishpat Yethchem Benot Yushalayim. There's 3 times in Shir Hashirim where it talks about taking a Shavuah. Gimul Shavuot Halalu Lama. What are these 3 oaths? Achat. Apparently we took an oath. Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bachoma.
Who took this oath?
We did. The Jewish people.
At what point in time?
Huh?
At what point?
It's an Agadata, I don't know. It's a drasha from Shir Hashirim. So in theory, God made us swear, Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bachoma. We won't return to Israel en masse. Bachoma or Kachoma, like a wall. We won't return as a wave. Meaning God kicked us out. In theory, we're supposed to stay out. Va'achat. We're commanded not to rebel against the Gentiles. And 3, the Gentiles concurrently took an oath not to torture us too much, not to mistreat us too much, okay? Not to deal with us harshly. So, it was out there. This is a real Gemara. It was out there for a long time. Okay? And people knew the Gemara. But it was really the Satmar Rebbe of Yol Teitelbaum who wrote the Ma'amar Gimel Shavuos and created a whole theology. And the theology basically was, we have no permission to go back until God brings us back. Based on this Gemara. And to go back, one second, it's even worse. To go back is a violation of these Shavuos. It's turning history on its head. Oh, and by the way, it's why the Holocaust happened. Okay? Like, you know, he doubled down. It wasn't just like... Okay? So I just want to point out, because it's so obvious to me, you know... He was a big Talmid Chacham. I just think that... You know, he's obviously completely wrong. But just on a simple level, I think it's an unbelievable thing that the Satmar Rebbe says that, you know, the Holocaust happened because of a reason. He knows the reason. Okay, but what about the State of Israel? That happened when God wasn't looking? Right? Like, I can explain to you why this bad thing happened. It's because of the Zionists. Okay, now explain to me why this really good thing is happening. But the Holocaust happened because God made it happen. The Israel is like some, you know, happening against God's will. It's bizarre. Anyway, but the Gemara exists. So here's the main thing to know, and this really matters. This Gemara is quoted, lahalacha, by nobody. Not by the Rambam, not by the Rush, not by the Tur, not by the Mechaber, not by anybody. So on a simple level, the answer is, it's an agadata. It comes to teach us something, comes to teach us how dangerous it is and how much we have to think. But, you know, to make a theology out of this is just, on some level, dishonest. Because it's not... One second, we're going to run out of time. Now, if you want to take it more seriously, there's still a number, and people did talk about this over the years. There's a number of things to talk about. One is, maybe we didn't come kachoma, you know, people came as they came. But the better answer is that the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha Mivinsk, wrote after the San Remo conference and after the Balfour Declaration, he wrote Great. Sar me'aleinu koach hashvua. Once the nations of the world said you could have a state, so obviously it's not a violation of a shvua to show up, right? A lot of people write very beautifully. I forgot a famous who wrote, like, if the UN only existed for November 29, 1947, it would have been worth it. You know, God made the UN,
which I think
so
is
that fantastic. Right, so that we're not in violation of the shvua. Okay. The painful one, but the one that also speaks to me is, you take it seriously. What was the shvua that the Gentiles made? I think maybe the Holocaust was a violation of their shvua, and as a result, we are freed from ours. The short answer is, you know, we could talk about this for a long time. There's a lot to talk about, but this Gemara is not la halacha, and even if it is, it's just. But again, the theological point is still an interesting one, which goes to, you know, the course of history and our role in history. And I think a certain view is, God kicked us out. You know, that's true. That's out there. When he invites us back, we should come. Now, you know, we think that we have to be part of that process. It's not going to happen on our own. He's not going to knock on your door in Brooklyn, you know, and force you out. But it's out there, that view of history and our role in history. I just think, it's a funny example, but I think about this a lot. The most miraculous military victory, you know, if you asked anybody and you look back, Jericho seems like a pretty good candidate, right? We walked around seven times, blew the ram's horns, the walls fell down. Okay, now I think to myself, okay, then what happened then? The walls fell down. They all got like a terminal cold and died? No, presumably we had to go in and kill them. Well, now, it was much easier because the walls fell down. But the idea that, you know, what does it mean that God's going to do it for us? We're not going to do anything? He just said to Tehillim? Even in Jericho, you know, there was a need for an army. It was as miraculous a miracle as there could be. But there was a need for an army, and the idea that we're just going to sit it out and wait for it to happen, you know, how long do you have to wait when all these things are going on? Okay. Now, I want to end with, we can do more stuff, I want to end with another famous Gemara, which relates to this idea of the value of the land of Israel. It relates to it in a strange way. One of the suggestions we had made in the Rambam, the one I don't like, but it's made and it might be, is that he doesn't count the land of Israel as a mitzvah because it's really preparatory for all the things we want to do. Here's the Gemara. The Gemara in Sota, Yidal Manal, the last source in 7. Dashrav Simlai. Why did Moshe so desperately want to come to the land of Israel? What, he wanted like great oranges? Right, the climate? Amar Moshe. Harbe mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael, ve'ein mitkaimin ela be'eretz Yisrael. Moshe said, there's tons of mitzvot atluyos ba'aretz, and they can only be done in the land of Israel. Ekanes ani la'aretz, kidei sheyit kaimu kulam al yadi. I want to do those mitzvot. Right? Sounds like a great idea. It sounds like really like as beautiful as it could get. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know, unlike that other view, I'm not worried about true Muslim Isra, I want to do true Muslim Isra. The problem is the end of the Gemara. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klum atam mevakesh el lekabel sachar. You just want to do mitzvah so you can get more reward? Great. Ma'ale ani alecha ki'ilu asitem. I'll give you schar, but you don't get to go in. I think it's depressing. Like it's sad for Moshe Rabbeinu. It's sad that, to me, the meaning of the Gemara, I'm just speculating, is Eretz Yisrael isn't a means to an end. It's not where we go so we could do more mitzvos. It's our destiny. It's why God made us a nation. It's where we're supposed to be. And to be able to, you know, the correct answer presumably was, God, I want to go into the land of Israel because I want to see the end of the journey. Because the reason why we exist is to be a people in our land. Yes, it's great to be able to do all these mitzvahs in the land, but the reason we exist is to be a people in our land. And like Moshe Rabbeinu, Ki'ilu gave the wrong answer. And therefore God said to him, great, I'll give you all the schar for all these mitzvahs, but you don't get to go in. Okay? I'll finish with this. I just remember this story. Rav Lichtenstein, Zatzal, was very, very close to Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner was a complicated figure with a big goal about Torah. And he lived in America and came to Israel a lot. So Lindsay said maybe the first or second year after he made Aliyah, Rav Huttner came, and Rav Lichtenstein went and picked him up at the airport. So Rav Huttner said to him, "Tell me, what's great about living in Israel? Like, what's special about living in Israel?" So Rav Lichtenstein said, I think what I would have said, which is, he says, you know, in America, your life is kind of compartmentalized. There's shul, there's your job, and there's all these different parts of your life. He said, when I live in Israel, I feel like it's much more holistic, it's much more unity, like every kind of, you know, contributes. Like, I think is a great answer. But Rav Huttner was a unique person. So Rav Huttner said, wrong. He said, the reason why it's special for you to live in Israel is because Moshe and Aaron didn't get to live in Israel, and you do. That's the story. Wow. Make of it as you wish. Happy Yom HaShoah.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Huh?